Welcome to episode 50 of season 11 of our Minute the Daily podcast, where we currently our way through the 2001 award-winning HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off her stint is award-winning documentarian Dana Nachman. Welcome back to the show once again, Dana.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, I told you, I always like having you, because you focus in on things that I usually don't, which is good. You know, because you have the documentarian eye. It makes this conversation so much more interesting.
Aw, thank you.
I'll never forget the first time that we did this with The Great Escape, and you were talking about the way that the shot went through the window and all that stuff. It was great. So you see, that's why I keep inviting you back.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
War ones are hard for me, but I try.
Okay, well, you've been doing well enough. It's, you know, we can't always do rom-coms. I'm sorry.
Darn it.
Or credit episodes of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know, that type of thing.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe that. I love that movie.
But those are great episodes because you talk so much about behind-the-scenes stuff that I wouldn't have known about. See, two days ago, you told me all about the insurance, thing. That, you know. You know, I learn new things all the time.
Not the best part. We just bound two policies for two films just yesterday. So that's the update.
Wow. You see, there you go. So episode 50 begins with the Menevisi still in retreat and ends with Bull having to make a decision. So we ended things yesterday with basically the guys from Easy getting their butts kicked. And, you know, they've decided that they're going to have to retreat. And we just see so many guys just running down the road, trying to just get for cover, trying to get out of the way. One of the British tanks shoots off another rocket, you know, to try and give them some cover. And they all make it back behind the tanks into the transports and start getting into the transports themselves as quickly as possible. You know, it's interesting the way that they present this all to us, and, you know, someone's screaming, "Keep moving, keep low," and then we see Lipton go, "Let's go, let's go, over you go," and then we see Lipton standing there by the transport, and he's looking at Buck, who, you know, we can see that Buck is bleeding from his rear end, you know, in his uniform. It's not that graphic. you can see that there are stains on his pants. How's that? And Garnier looks at Lipton and goes, "One bullet, four holes." And Lipton goes, "Yeah, tell us a miracle." And then Garnier looks at him and goes, "Yeah, Lip, I don't think we know where Bull is, huh?" So, you know, they're now a little concerned that Bull hasn't made it back with everybody else. But it's still, it's nice to see a lot of the guys all the way back. And then we see Winters checking out what's going on, and he starts screaming, "Let's go, let's go, let's go, keep moving, move them out, let's go, hurry up, let's go, let's go." So, you know, as far as Winters is concerned, he's not happy about the fact that they're having to retreat, but he wants to get as many men back as possible, which is very important. And then Nix shows up next to him, and Nix goes, "How bad?" He goes, "I don't know yet." And then there's a great shot here, because, you know, one of the Germans actually ends up shooting Nix, and his helmet goes flying, and you can see that he gets hit right in the helmet. Again, from a movie making perspective, it looks very, very realistic that he just got shot in the head. And I mean, having seen Saving Private Ryan, where a guy gets shot in the head and pulls off his helmet to look at it and then gets shot in the head literally, it's nice that they don't do that here with Nix. You know, his his helmet goes flying, and Winters rushes to him and goes, "Nix." He goes, "I'm all right, I'm all right." And then he goes, "Am I all right?" And he goes, "Yeah." So I mean, first of all, I like the fact that they're showing us the friendship of these two guys, even at this point in the middle of battle. You know, that as soon as Nix gets hit, Winters forgets about what he's doing and goes to help him out. So I like the way they do that.
Yeah, definitely need that.
Yeah, I mean, again, anyone who knows the story knows that the two of them, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen this, the two of them remain friends for another 50 years afterwards until Nixon died, of old age. So, this is, on the one hand, the whole idea of the show is to show the bond between the men, but every so often we see the personal bonds between them. Another example is Babe and Garnier. These are also guys who remain friends for 50, 60 years afterwards. So it's not just the idea of being a part of this big group. It's also possibly, meeting someone who will be a friend for the rest of your life.
Because you've been through something so
Yeah,
intense together.
exactly. And Nixon and Winters, they also went through all the training together. And they also dealt with Sobel together as officers, as opposed to with just the men did, stuff like that. So I like the fact how throughout the course of the series it comes back to their friendship also. So it's a great
Yeah,
theme.
I feel like for me, because I'm not like a huge war movie person, like that kind of thing just keeps it together for me to completely, and probably everybody, but
Right. Again, that's part of the whole idea here. Then the two of them crawl over for some cover behind one of the tanks, and Lipton shows up. And Lipton goes, "Captain, we got four dead, 11 injured."
yep.
So it's good that Lipton's able to come and both give Winters and us an update as to what's going on. And he goes, "All right, let's move them out." And then Luke goes, "Oh, and sir, Randleman's missing too." He goes, "Randleman? Yes, sir." He goes, "Okay, let's go." So the idea is that you want to care for as many of the men as possible, and you want to make sure that as many of them show up, when they're retreating. But you can't risk anyone to go deal with trying to find a missing man who at this point could be presumably dead. So it's nice the way that they show this to us. And the idea is that sometimes you have to, as a commander and as a boss or a manager or whatever it is, sometimes you need to make decisions that are the best for the entire group as opposed to for an individual. But you can still see the look of pain on Winter's face by making this decision. Like, he's not happy about having made this decision, but he does know that this is the right thing to do. Because, again, it going back to the Saving Private Ryan analogy, you're not going to risk eight guys for one guy because you don't know what the story is. I mean, again, they know that they have four that died here. So, it doesn't mean that everyone, it might be that there's five. And why go risk something for that? So I like the way that they present this. And then the great music of this series begins to swell as the transport starts moving, and we see Webster, and we see that his hand is like really filled with blood, because he was just dealing with Vlad Klinkin, who was one of the guys that was killed. It's a nice way to show the individual perspective on what they're doing as they're moving out from this battle. We get to see the various men comforting one another as they move along, which is also good. It shows once again the camaraderie between them. And you have the new guys that are all looking, trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this type of stuff too. It's not just the veterans and the new guys that all now have to deal with this defeat that they've just gone through. But I do like the way that the camera moves from man to man, and we see different expressions on their faces, all showing how distraught they are in all that's going on.
Yeah, no, I like that too, and it gives you like a perspective, each person has their own perspective. And I like that. It gives you kind of a grounding. And then right after that, we go to the next shot of the one who's by himself, which is a totally different perspective.
Right. But beforehand, as the transport's moving, so we then see Garnier turn Martin and says, "Where's the bull?" He goes, "I don't know." And again, the idea here is that these guys in some ways are more distraught that they don't know what happened to Bill as opposed to knowing for sure that he was killed or captured or something like that. It's the unknown that is more of an issue for these guys.
Right.
And then it lingers a little bit on Martin's face, and then we're back in the village again, and we see that the Germans have pretty much taken over the village, and we see a whole bunch of their tanks and APCs and things just moving through, plus all the men walking through, and it happens to be, I think it's a great shot the way that they do it, because they're showing us that we saw all the easy guys running away, and here we see the Germans just marching along without any fear.
Yeah, I really, really love this shot.
And then the way that the camera then moves down into the sewer, and we see that Bull is actually hiding in the sewer, which is also great.
Right, and then look at the the flash of fire on the other side. I love that.
Yeah.
And you can see it in it's the tank on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see it underneath. It's super, super classy shot. I like it.
Exactly. And he's just looking, trying to figure out, okay, how what's he going to do to survive this?
Right.
And then it becomes nighttime, and we see one of the tanks is still on fire and starts to explode. And then we see that Bull is actually no longer in the sewer. And we see that he's in a barn, and he's trying to figure out how he's going to keep himself safe in this barn. And he goes and finds a little bit of a place off to the side, and makes a safe place for him to hold up, in the hay. So yeah, I like the way that is. And he's vigilant, but he's we see that he's somewhat tired also, and needs to constantly make sure that everything's good for him.
Yeah, and it's interesting also how they cut from him seeing the barn. I mean, presumably that's the barn.
Yeah.
To mm-hmm. being in it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too, because they don't need to show us how he escapes and gets there, when no one's around or anything.
It's kind of when you're thinking about editing and writing scripts, it's you get in late and leave early, in terms of you don't have to see them opening the door and then running through the door. They could just be in there. That's what this is to me. It's we missed all the boring parts, and we just got to when he got to the we he sees the place and we're in the place.
Right.
And that's the magic of editing.
Yeah.
Movies.
I agree, and I like the way that they do that. Definitely is a good way. And then we see that he opens the stock of his gun and pulls out what seems to be a candy bar or something. Maybe it's chocolate or something like that. So he has something there to help sustain him while he's waiting around, trying to figure out what he's going to do in order to get out of here. But again, he knows that he's got to stay on top of things. He pulls out his knife because he hears someone coming. And then he sees a man come into there, and he puts his knife to the man's throat, and then the man looks over, and we see there's a young woman next to it, and also coming into the barn, and Bull sees it and begins to realize that these are friendlies. This is just the farmer and his daughter. And then the shot changes, and we actually see them covering up a body. I believe that this is Van Klinken. That they're covering up here, and it's also trying to show us the casualties of war, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm.
And Webster, we saw before Webster with the blood on his hand. We saw Webster trying to save him, and now we see Webster just looking over his body. So it tells us something about Webster, about how he's dealing with this situation.
Yeah.
And then we're back with a bunch of the new recruits, and Hashi says, "I never fired a shot the whole time." And Webster shows up
like a badge of honor.
And sort of, I guess. Well, his gun jammed on him, which goes to show that he is a new recruit. He's someone who didn't know what he was supposed to be doing at that time. So that is something about that. And these guys are all trying to figure out what to do. And then one of the guys that's there, he goes, find anything out? And he goes, about what? He goes, anything. So, I
I just
mean,
don't know.
exactly. They're completely clueless as to what they need to do at this point. But then, the shot moves a little bit, and we see Garcia, who is basically also very distraught about this whole thing. And all these guys just, they have someone, so, they brought him a loaf of bread, but they're able to at least find some way, I guess, to give themselves some energy at this point. They said, "Did you find anything out?" And he goes, "About what?" And he goes, "Anything." And then he goes, "About what we're doing next." And the response is, "Nope, I didn't hear one thing." So again, these guys are completely clueless as to what they're supposed to do at this point, which makes sense. Everyone was just in retreat, and they need to figure out, what they're going to do. And then I like the fact that at this point, they give us an update on, the fact that Lieutenant Brewer was shot, and so he goes, "Lieutenant Brewer's going to make it." He goes, "What?" He says, "Lieutenant Brewer's going to make it." He goes, "Nah, there's no way, because when we saw Brewer get shot earlier this week, he had turned his head because I think Bull had called out to him, and then he was shot in the neck." And he goes, "Nah, there's no way." He goes, "He's heading back to England. They'll probably send him home." "How is that possible?" He said, "Well, he did turn his head at the last second when Sergeant Rendleman called out to him." So I think part of the idea here also is to make us care more about Bull at this point, because here we're more or less finding out that Bull saved Brewer's life. Even though it wasn't necessarily intentional, but he still managed to do it. So I like the way that they give that to us. I mean, again,
There's,
it's
I guess, carry along with the story.
Again, it really, they all believed that Brewer was dead. I mean, basically they say that someone said, "Forget him, he's gone, he's gonna die," and they apparently just left Brewer there lying on the ground. They said he heard it all and never forgot it, and never let the men forget it when he recovered and rejoined the company. So it's not necessarily something you want to hear. So yeah, it's a little bit of a problem. At this point, we're back in the barn, and Bull is still trying to figure out what he needs to do with this situation. Is this a friendly or not? And he's debating that issue as the 5-minute segment ends. So people are gonna have to come back tomorrow to find out exactly what he decides to do. Is he going to slit this guy's throat or not?
A stressful cliffhanger.
Yes. You see, that's the thing. When you do movies by minute, so you have more cliffhangers than are intended by the filmmakers.
Yes,
So
totally.
exactly. No
But
one expected us to have to think about that. But it's nice to place that in there.
it's sort of in the DNA of the storytelling, right? That's what makes people keep watching
Exactly.
everything.
I agree. I don't have any problems with it. And come on, I don't think that any of the people who made this 25 years ago believed that there would be someone crazy enough to cut it into 5-minute episodes and start discussing the whole thing. So, the fact that this 5 minutes ends exactly on a cliffhanger is great. I'm happy about
Yes,
that.
totally.
So, Dana, do you have anything else you want to say about this 5 minutes?
No, I like it. I like the kind of back and forth of the storylines. Keeps you really engaged, and the themes are the overarching themes of, their relationships. I love it.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that what they're also doing here is they're showing us pretty much for the first time a failure of Easy Company. It's not only about all of the successes, but here's a failure. This is something that we hoped that we'd be able to do. We were completely outnumbered. The tanks got blown up along the way, so we're in retreat. So we're gonna have to see how Winters deals with that also. So.
Right.
All right.
To be continued.
Exactly. So today's segment is called Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five movie brothers. So Dana, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. So my number five is Blues Brothers. My number four is, okay, this is the really embarrassing one, but it's been on my house on repeat, so I'm just going to do it. Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Okay, you're not the first person to use that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's embarrassing for all of us. No, but it was just, it's been in my house on repeat for many years. it was not my choice to watch it. Okay, number three is Mrs. Doubtfire. Number two is Splash. And number one is Rain Man.
Okay, that is a great list. I like that. I like the list.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. And now we will once again play the game that I know you don't like playing, but we're going to try.
oh, no.
The game is Name That World War II Movie.
So. Oh, gosh.
You know me.
I'm bad at these things.
I have more confidence in you than you think. We'll see how you do.
Okay.
All right. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. And around and around and around the wheel goes.
I wonder if you even have my favorite movie. It actually could be considered a World War II movie.
Okay, this is a movie from 1987.
Uh-huh.
Okay, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, that's gonna be easy.
Well, we're gonna find out. Starring John Malkovich and Christian Bale, and it takes place in a I guess you can sort of call it a Japanese internment camp. But, you know, it's not for soldiers, it's for civilians. Do you have any clue what that might be?
Is it Empire of the Sun?
Yes, it is.
Woo-hoo!
You see?
Woohoo!
You know, didn't trust yourself well enough.
I know. I got to get in the zone. Now I'm in the zone after three episodes.
Apparently. But that's good. That's a good thing. All right. Excellent. So,
awesome.
Dana, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Sure. My website has a direct link to me. It's Dana Nachman, DanaNachman.com.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieAroundMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieRob@MovieRob.net. Dana, thank you very much for joining me for these last 3 days. It's definitely been great having you on once again. And I hope that you will agree to come back in the future. You know, I'll try not to only do World War II movies.
Thank you, of course.
You know, but I know Serendipity is the one movie you want me to do, but you know, that's a little further down on the list.
I definitely will see. But it's good for me to get into your zone. Get out of my zone.
That's okay. No problem. All right, so I will be back on Monday with another guest. But until then, Kurhi!
Kurhi!